The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
You're listening to Business is Boring, a podcast that reckons it's anything but. Business is Boring is brought to you by Spark Lab, offering inspiration and practical advice to help businesses find their edge. To hear more about Spark Lab, including details about the latest events, workshops, and business tools, visit sparklab.co.nz. And now, here's your host, Simon Pound.
Kia ora koutou katoa. Welcome to Business is Boring. The VR and AR revolution has been coming for a while, and Beyond is a pioneer in the space that's been leading efforts to make these new virtual worlds positive and safe spaces for all. They've been at the front of immersive games, shared experiences. They've provided the worlds for some of the most successful Web3 projects to come out of New Zealand, and now Beyond are right at the beginning of the Apple Vision Pro world. Co-founder CEO Jessica Mannins has just been in the US at GDC in South by Southwest and joins us to chat about doing better in these new spaces, where VAR is at, and what's next for them. Te nakwe, thank you for joining us.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you via video from Wellington home base. Hey, so tell us, how did you first get excited about the world of VR and AR? Because you and the crew were super early into it.
Yeah, we were, although there'll be some earlier people who are like, no, we were earlier. But you know, eight years deep, I do kind of feel like that's true. But you know what? Funny enough, I was actually working and running a co-working space in Wellington, the Biz Dojo. And at the time, I was looking at some well-being applications, you know, something for myself that I wanted to work on the side. And that's when Pokemon Go launched. And I was like, I know it's cheesy that's kind of an inspiration, but it was. And I just saw all of these people on their phones out and about, and they were together and they were doing social things together and having fun. And I was like, you know, a lot of the research I've been doing around well-being and the applications and stuff that I was looking at were app-related, you know, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting. They are solving some of the problems that I want to solve around bringing people together, using games to do that. And that's kind of where I kind of first got my inspiration of like augmented reality is the future. And I 100% want to be a part of this.
And that idea of it being social is still kind of like really interesting, right? Because so many people think about all these things as being a little bit kind of solitary, you know, playing your game in your room or whatever. But like my son is playing games in the room, and all I do is hear him talking to his friends.
Right? Laughing with their friends, playing with their friends. Like, it is incredibly social. And, you know, there was a lot of research during COVID when people were very isolated that those that were playing multiplayer social games had a much more improved well-being experience during those times of isolation. So, you know, it really does work in terms of, you know, making people feel good and that social element. It's not isolating.
How did you go about taking an interest in the space into starting a studio making games and projects and cool things?
Well, you know, I had worked at a global startup based in New Zealand, Starnow, for 8 years of my life. And I was very much of the mind that, you know, we are a nation that can be global from day one, that we can use technology to solve problems. And I'm just passionate about that. And I always knew I wanted my own company. I didn't necessarily know it was going to be an augmented virtual reality studio, but I knew that I wanted to do something myself where I was taking some of those big risks and I was solving some problems and from an entertainment background, wanting to bring joy and happiness and excitement and fun to people's lives. You know, the studio itself kind of, you know, these things aren't always as planned out as you think they might be, but I started an R&D centre first for virtual and augmented reality called Project R. And that was a collaboration with the Wellington Company and the Wellington City Council. And that was really to try and ignite people's interest in the technology, to bring corporate startups, students together, you know, in a shared space, try and find projects we could collaborate on and learn. And out of that fell my first opportunity working together with my co-founder, Anton, at another studio, and then creating Beyond.
What were the first projects you could make happen yourselves?
Well, we put William Wairoa into augmented reality as part of a campaign to try and encourage young tamariki to vote in the election. So, you know, that was actually quite innovative back then. You know, you had a little postcard at the time, you know, you put your phone over and, oh, there he is. you know, we our first kind of big VR project was actually with the New Zealand Breast Cancer Foundation, and that was looking at how can we use virtual reality to reduce pain, anxiety, fear. Again, kind of back to some of those things that I was really keen to explore early on in my startup days of well-being. And we created three experiences where people were taken into different environments around Aotearoa New Zealand, and they will also be able to interact with those places. So in the Abel Tasman, for example, they could be in a beautiful beach area and they could draw in the clouds. They could draw little pictures in the sand, and those went through clinical trials and were proven to reduce anxiety. So that was some of those early things that we did before we ended up making our own games.
That's so cool. And like, maybe to even take a little step back, I'm saying VR, AR, like everyone knows what we mean, right? But like, how do you explain if you're, you know, having a barbecue and people are like, what are these things? The people who aren't in the world. So AR... at first, maybe, and then VR being needing a bit more kit generally, right?
So augmented reality, AR, it's augmenting your reality. So it is generally overlaying a digital object, you know, character, something within your real world. And so that's, you know, back in the day, they would often be using a phone. So you would look through your phone, like Pokemon Go that we're talking about, augmented reality. Nowadays, it's Apple Vision Pro and Meta and many other kind of headsets offer us that. And then virtual reality is really changing your whole reality into a virtual one. So that's when we're completely immersed in a new environment, a new world. So we don't see the two together, we're just in the one. And some people might say that might be using a 360 filmed experience that's immersing you in that and taking you to places around the world, or it might be an animated virtual world that's been created and using a game engine to pull you into that space and allow you to play or interact within that world.
And there's a lot of, like, you know, you mentioned the Apple Vision Pro. It feels like that's like, you know, a bit of a turning point maybe for the space, because it's been on its way for quite a while, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we started in this industry, we were like, well, we've heard Apple is working on something and that's going to be a game changer. And when people used to say to me, are you sure? Oh, I haven't seen that much, you know, coming up around, you know, augmented reality, which like, just wait until Apple gets something out. And then I stopped saying it for a few years because I think people got sick of it and I was starting to get a little bit worried. When will this headset come out that I've dreamed of? But yes, it's out and it is a game changer.
Yeah, let's chat a bit more later about that, because you've been in the States and have seen kind of the impact of that there. But to go back a little bit to kind of the growth of Beyond, like heading up to the pandemic, you had pulled together some pretty amazing projects, hey, and working with some big partners around the world. How did you go from taking Beyond from like a studio working for third parties to making your own IP and building your own worlds?
Yeah, well, we actually had a different studio back then that was doing a lot of that kind of service work. And that's where we were thinking, look, this is where we learn this is where we learn, we experiment, and we can get as much information as possible. And then it was a trip to the Augmented World Expo in the US that kind of ignited our ideas and our vision for Beyond. And that was, we went to this place, they had a playground, which was all of these experimental kind of VR and AR experiences. And one of them was this multiplayer free roam game. And it had all these big OptiTracks and backpack PCs you had to hold. It was, you know, it was very kind of cumbersome, and like the technology was expensive that was using to run this kind of four player game. But it was so cool. It was social. We were doing, like, you know, having to like go under lasers and collaborate together to stop the sharks from getting us. And we came home and we said, look, there's an opportunity here for us to use some of the new technology coming out, like the free roam technology. So a standalone headset, no backpack PC, no computer, you know, needing to like be connected to. And if we focus on using this new headset technology, make accessible gameplay that anyone could play and enjoy, there, I think there's an opportunity. And we pitched it, and we got some angel investment, and that's how Beyond started. So we, in many ways, luck and timing come into this, but thankfully we had the experience and the credentials from those few years of doing that service work to be able to create our own IP.
From the beginning, you chose to make things that weren't like zombie first-person shooters or hacking people up with axes and the stuff that like quite a few games go down those routes, right? Tell us about that approach and yeah, like trying to make positive or good experiences, yeah. And how that's so radical.
I know, it's crazy that it was so radical, but really, you know, in those early days of VR, all the games were zombie shooters. And like, I'm not going to lie, they are fun. Like, I'm not going to deny that I don't like sometimes going in and battling some zombies. But as a mum and as someone new to the gaming space, so coming from an entertainment background, I was like, surely there's more to this. Surely there's more stories and characters and interactions and things that we can be doing within this space that I would be comfortable at the time for my boy Jasper to play, you know, that my mum would be want to get into, you know, how can I make this accessible? You know, I really kind of, that was a key element for me, accessibility across all areas of accessibility. And so that's where we kind of came up with, well, we know some of the mechanics, you know, shooting mechanics, everyone still wants to do it. But what if you fire a hot dog at someone and you can turn someone into a giant pineapple? And what if you're just going around and collecting things and it's a Dr. Seuss world and you're putting on a head and it might be a horse's head or a silly cow head or a chicken, and we're just making people laugh. And that's where we kind of got to with our first game, Oddball, which was the free roam game that we first made.
How are things looking heading into COVID times?
Really good. So exciting for us. We had a really cool team. We had we'd received a research and development grant from Callaghan Innovation because we were having to use new headset technology and then be able to create the server behind it that was then controlling the game and the tracking system, because, you know, we were having to track everyone within a real world and the virtual world. There was a lot of kind of safety precautions that we had to do. So we kind of done some really interesting tech alongside making this really fun game, you know. And it was, you know, probably about 18 months worth of development, so it was not a short amount of time. My co-founder Anton had gone off to IAPA, where they have this huge expo for anyone working in the entertainment industry, you know, whether it's water slides or virtual reality. And he had managed to sell Oddball into 2-Bit Circus in Los Angeles, which really is kind of that place where everybody knew wanted to get their game into, because people knew if you were in there, that's where people came and found interesting new companies and technology and games. And that's exactly what happened. We got in there and suddenly we had so many inquiries. We had the biggest names asking us to do games exclusively for their family entertainment centres around the States. We had a sponsorship deal in New Zealand where we were going to go out and have our game or custom-made kind of arcades at all of the big gaming sports events, at the big music events, you know. If we were just honest, it's like a dream come true, right? When you put all that hard work and then you see it come to fruition. And that's where we were at kind of in February 2020.
And two-bit circus. So for people that haven't experienced that kind of environment, tell us what that is.
So two-bit circus is very unique. It's kind of one of the earliest kind of micro amusement parks is what they call themselves. And it's a place where families can come, you can go on a date, there's a bar in the middle, it has a bit of a circusy feel to it, there's old school arcades, there's a theatre, there's STEM programs happening for students, you know, there's the latest technology is there, there's innovators working, they have Friday nights where they have the latest, games, people coming in testing games. It's a community, it's an environment, it's gaming, it's fun, it's party places. That's what it is.
Yeah. And so on the verge of all that happening, but so much of that is social, right? And what does the pandemic do to that?
Kills it. It kills it. It was devastating. We had, 3 weeks in and everything is closed. And we required arcades, we required family entertainment centres to play our games. You know, we hadn't built it for consumers at home. And that's not what our technology was doing. That's not what the game was about. It was about going together to a physical space. So, there were the phone calls quickly from investors of, it's over. And there were phone calls from sponsors dropping the deal. And there was contracts, cancelled, and it was basically the end. The whole team, I had to let the whole team go during COVID. It was a pretty, pretty crappy time, and I know it was for many people. It was sad and very disappointing, to say the least.
That's so hard. And how did you build back? As it was amazing to see the way that you created these environments, you responded so in so many ways to keep the dream moving.
Stupidity, resilience, sheer determination. I don't like to let people down either. I really like to commit to what I'm doing, and I know there's times where we have to say, hey, it's over, and it's over, and we just have to learn to live with that as entrepreneurs. That failure is a part of this journey, but I just wasn't quite ready to do that. I just felt like there was an opportunity to pivot in some way, to use our skills, our network, our talent in New Zealand, and so myself and Anton approached Where to Workshop at that time, and we'd had a good relationship with Sir Richard Taylor. He'd been playing Oddball. And, he'd told us it was the most fun he'd had in VR. I think we definitely used that quote a bit when we were selling it. And, we said, well, you're doing location-based stuff, right? But you're impacted as well. So what if we collaborated together and did a virtual reality game for consumers? And that enabled me to end up raising a little bit more capital, getting us through. And it led on to kind of a bit of a new business model, I guess, of partnerships, of finding either a way to collaborate on somebody else's IP, so taking their IP and putting it into immersive worlds, extending that IP, and then creating new IP with other people. So those kind of partnerships and collaborations became a big part of the future of Beyond.
And to keep the lights on and to keep your studio space going, what did you do to your weekends?
Yes, my weekends disappeared as we opened Beyond and we made it into an arcade that would run Oddball. And so we were, I suppose, very fortunate in New Zealand in that our spaces opened a lot earlier than the rest of the world did. And so we had a big studio that was originally our kind of area for developing the game, and we transformed it into an operating arcade, and we ran many games, for families, birthday parties, corporate events, date nights, and our weekends were gone playing Oddball. My son spent many weekends sitting alongside me being the game master and helping me clean headsets, and that's what we did.
It's an amazing story of not folding and doing so many different things to keep it moving, to bring it back. And we'll be back in a moment to hear where the business is today and where Beyond is going next. Spark is proud to partner with the Sustainable Business Network and the Climate Action Toolbox. The free Climate Action Toolbox can provide you with simple step-by-step guides to measure and reduce your emissions. Help lead the way to a low carbon future for New Zealand. Visit sparklab.co.nz/sustainability to find out more.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Hoki mai anō, welcome back to Business is Boring, where we're with Jessica Mannins of Beyond. So where's the business today, and how did you build back to a point where you're now one of the first developers getting a really cool game out on the Vision Pro?
Well, as I said, these partnerships started to happen. So people really took notice of what we were doing and how we were able to create these beautiful worlds and really quality worlds. And so we ended up doing a partnership with the team at Fluff World and the now Futureverse, who wanted some immersive 3D worlds for some of their IP. And that ended up leading to us to make, you know, these different environments, these interactive environments. It led us to collaborating with Snoop Dogg on one of them. We created a music studio. So, you know, we did really well out of that. We ended up partnering with some other great studios like Felix and Paul. And all in the meantime, you know, kind of back to that old school model of services work while you're working on your own IP, we did that. And we were working on some IP Combinauts and Runaways. And Runaways is the game that we are now working on for the Apple Vision Pro. So, yeah, it's been an interesting ride.
What does it take to make a... And when you say it's kind of a free roam or a VR game like Runaways, what's involved in that? What's the gameplay like, and how do you have to build the world around it, and how do you bring it together as a studio?
So Runaways is actually an endless runner, and it's based on some of those traditional runners that we've all played, you know, the 2D runners, you know, whether it's Jetpack Joyride or Alto's Odyssey, you know, and this is an augmented reality. So for the Apple Vision Pro, you can see your real world, and then you can see our lovely little first character. His name is Hank, and Hank is racing away to get away from an overlord who's trying to chase him. He's been, of course, heading to Gloop, you know, to mine Gloop for many years, and he's managed to escape. And so you are helping him escape, jumping you know, gaps and getting, you know, trying to avoid traps. And so that's kind of the gameplay within your own environment. It changes, your whole kind of space changes as the world progresses. And yeah, I guess it takes, you know, coming up with the ideas and the creative side of things. It needs talented artists who can concept that. You know, we need, we're working in Unity for this project, because that's what's needed for currently for working on the Vision Pro. So you need great engineers, gameplay engineers who can work in the engine, and 3D artists, you know, who can bring that art to life. And then people like us who, you know, get in the way of everything and make all the changes and... and test and do all, and wear all the hats.
And part of it is taking it out into the world. And you've just been out in the world at the GDC and the South by Southwest and a bunch of other things. Tell us about that trip.
That trip was twofold, right? We wanted to get Runaways out into the hands of users as quickly as possible. I think it's such an important part of the journey, is getting people in playing the game while you are making it, building your community, learning from how people play it so that you can iterate and change, like any kind of product, right? That's just standard. And so we needed to get overseas because, let's be honest, you couldn't even buy a Vision Pro in New Zealand, so we don't know if we really have many customers here. And so we needed to get overseas. And so getting to South by Southwest, that was our second time there. We had an opportunity to speak on a panel about innovation in New Zealand with some other fantastic people, and then to run an event with some old friends of ours that we met a few years back when we were over there with the Fluff World team doing a big activation. And it's just a great opportunity to see new technology, to network, to meet with people, whether it's investors, you know, publishers, and your customers. And then, you know, GDC, that's, you know, that's the biggest game development development conference, or one of, in the world. And so that was the first time we have ever been to that. And again, just really wanted to get out, meet people, test the game, you know, see what people thought about it, and just see what the environment as a whole was. And you know what? It was very, very encouraging. Virtual reality, mixed reality, XR, all the terms that people like to throw out, that was everywhere. Meta was one of the key sponsors at GDC, the first booth you saw when you walked in. Apple Vision Pro, not out there yet in that kind of, you know, mass gaming, you know, space. However, a lot of chat about it, like as a game changer in the industry. I mean, it's Apple.
Yeah, and what's your view on that? As it's really interesting because Meta has invested so much, and the, you know, their purchase of Oculus and then making it kind of like quite affordable in the scheme of these things, but hasn't quite had that kind of effect of making it mainstream, really. And there seems to be a lot of chat around Apple, but how do you think that the situation is now? Where do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, so I think Meta is brilliant in what they've done for the gaming industry and for virtual reality and for indie studios as a whole to be able to, you know, access this technology and make games. And Apple has come in and, you know, their terms are a bit different in terms of even what they call it, spatial computing. You know, they're trying to do something a little bit different in terms of, you know, you can anchor things within your real world at the same time. I could have a little game up here, I can have my big screen here, or I can completely immerse myself in the most amazing, you know, high definition movie, you know, without having to go to the IMAX. I can just lie back on my couch with my headset. You know, so it is a game changer. It is expensive. I mean, what Apple first generation product isn't expensive? It has got some things that will need to be ironed out. It's not, clearly not a gaming device, you know, first, you know, off, you know, straight away. There was only a couple of Apple Arcade games on when we first got it, and now a few more are launching. But this is only generation one. So, I mean, everybody I speak to who's in this industry is like, well, I mean, the quality is just incredible. It's amazing to develop on.
And it's funny, like, you know, with Oculus and the like Beat Saber is a great game. You're like completely, it's amazingly immersive. You really feel like the walls are coming at you. It's a simple gameplay. Like little things like that that give you a glimpse into what the world could be as more smart people make cool things to play with. And then with Apple, that, you know, it feels more maybe to me at the moment like a personal entertainment device, like, you know, for the kind of people who used to buy Blu-rays, you know, maybe this is like a Blu-ray person's thing where they'll watch super immersive videos at home. And there are a couple of moments like the dinosaur immersive experience, you know, the butterfly flutters up and yes. You go, oh yes, I see where this is going, right?
Yeah, that one's a brilliant experience. The quality is just amazing, and the little dinosaurs come up and you can put your hand out and they come up to you. And it really is, you know, I mean, you just don't, that quality, that definition, you know, is just absolutely amazing. So it's given us a glimpse of the future and what we can do and we can build, which is extremely inspiring. You know, as a creative, as a developer, that's what we, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to bring that amazing, you know, quality to life. But then to your point about Beat Saber, sometimes the most simplest experiences are the most successful. There is a game right now. So my son, he's now 10. You know, his favorite games, you know, of course, you know, Roblox, Fortnite. Well, guess what his favorite game is now? It's a game where you play in virtual reality as a gorilla and you run around and tag each other.
That's real cute.
It's called Gorilla Tag. They've made over $52 million US in, you know, like in the last probably 12 months. It's absolutely like hilarious. And all you're doing is like this, tag.
And we are still like kind of in a day one of the kit, right? Because the future of AR is going to be more like sunglasses that have video projection in them than great big ski goggles, right? Like it's very clear that, and if you look at the way the world, I think in the future you'll look back at this period of history and go, wasn't it weird that parents would like put a screen up between them and their kids to like video them when they played? Like it is kind of odd to have these screens that disintermediate the world. And I can definitely see a world where everyone has glasses or something that means that you can have that thing, right?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I know when the Google glasses first came out, everyone's like, oh, my privacy, you know, you can film, but, you know, the latest Boz ones, can, you know, you, they're all out there again, you know, and again, they'll just become, you know, all of these headsets will become smaller, lighter, you know, the technology will improve and enable us to remove that friction of having something between us and make things more social. And I think that's, you know, and that's where Apple and Meta are both going is, you know, social is key because, you know, to your point around this personal device, you know, at the moment it can be quite isolating, great for watching movies on a plane, you know, all of that. But, you know, the next push really is people, you know, and Charlie Fink, you know, says that people is the killer app for Apple Vision Pro or for spatial computing. And that's where, you know, at the moment the ability to bring other people into your space, avatars, you know, that's where it's going to change the game. And that's, you know, there's a beta out, I think I read just today, and so I'll probably after this jump on and have a little play of 3D holograms of, you know, of your friends together in the space and using the Apple Vision Pro. And that, you know, a lot of people are saying that it's starting to feel like what, you know, we've all imagined, that future of being able to be social but be remote and watch a movie together, play together, hang together, whatever it might be. And I think that's where it's all heading. Yeah.
And these worlds, like, you've been a leading voice around accessibility and different stories and, you know, making spaces safe for everyone in these new kind of worlds. Tell us about how that is here, because it's not, you know, there's a, in an emerging space, there's a way for it not to go down the route of everything being first person shooters or, you know, horrible comment sections, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just think there's room in this industry for everyone to work in it. I think there's room for everyone to play in it. And that if we create environments and studios that build these different experiences, we will see that there is an audience for all of them. You know, not everyone wants to play a shooter, you know. And it's fine if you do, but, you know, then if you want to play a silly game where there's a tentacle chasing a little guy on a, you know, on a jetpack and, you know, then play that. Or if you want to be a gorilla and tag each other, you'll be able to play that. And it should be safe. You should feel welcome, you know, and one of the great things is that, you know, yes, we could have these realistic avatars, but also you can choose whoever you want to be in these worlds, you know, and you can be accepted for whoever you are. And there's a lovely element to that as well. So, you know, just making games and spaces feel good for everybody and feel like everyone can play. And that's where the originally, like, the arcade comes in, because you might not be able to afford one of these headsets, let's be honest, you know. Certainly not many people can afford an Apple Vision Pro, but hopefully you have the opportunity to go with your family and maybe have a chance to play on some of these headsets in an arcade and experience that fun together.
Yeah, and the possibilities for creativity and storytelling and magic and whimsy and stuff are just they're kind of magic, hey?
Oh, it's real magic. It's like, it's creating these wow experiences for people. There's nothing better than that. Like, anything you imagine, you can make come true in these worlds, you know, and you get to be the character. You get to be immersed in that world and play the hero, play the villain, play whoever you want to be. It's pretty cool.
You've had quite a ride of, you know, through the last few years with this. What would your advice be for people who do see kind of like a future just tantalizingly close and want to get into a new industry and be at the front of something?
Oh, you just have to try stuff, you know. We're so privileged in many ways around what's available online, you know, if you have access to that and you can learn. And I would just say just experiment, test, get people trying your stuff as early as possible, you know, build a community around what you're doing, find other people who have that same passion for you, whether it's joining, you know, the Game Developers Association and then joining, being on their Slack channel and finding good people, or on Discord. And, you know, and then just prototype, get stuff out there and test it in the real world. You know, the first thing you make is probably going to be shit. and that's okay, because that's where we learn, you know, and so just just try it, get it out there, and you know, and be somebody that you know, that networks and finds people to be a part of. I have a brilliant young developer, Emma, who's working with us at the moment. She just approached me and just said, "Hey, look, I love what you're doing. I've just finished my degree. Can I come?" You know, and we're working on a few little projects together that she's gonna hopefully try and get some funding for, and you know, and I can help mentor, and you know, just, you know, you have to have that initiative and a bit of drive to do it, but you can find those people around you to support you as well, because there's lots of people out there that want to do this. But yeah, experiment, prototype, fail, try again.
Love it. And as a final thought, what will success be for you and for Beyond?
Oh, it's a success. It comes in so many forms, doesn't it? It comes from the little wins every day, you know, when we're working on something, you know, and it feels good, you know, when someone nails something in the team from those experiences. I think that ultimately, you know, for the company, it's making a really successful game that has wide appeal and many, many players. And of course, that means, you know, that success for us as a company and to our investors, to our employees, you know, that ultimately we're bringing immersive, joyful experiences to the world that many people as possible love.
Awesome. Well, can't wait to see where you take it next, and looking forward to Runaways hitting the world. Thank you so much for sharing your story so far with us. That's Jessica Mannins of Beyond. Kia ora.
Thank you.
Thank you to you for listening and having us along in your ears. Thank you to everyone who helps make this happen, like our producer, Jane Yee. And if you do like what we do, please do like and subscribe. It really does help. E noho rā.
From the Spin-Off Podcast Network, that was Business is Boring. Brought to you by SparkLab. Make sure you're following Business is Boring wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information on SparkLab, visit sparklab.co.nz. Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.